Everybody, and welcome. It's 11 o'clock, Wednesday, December 11th, 2019, and thanks for joining us for the 81st episode of the Rock and Roll Shrink Radio Show here on Blog Talk Radio. Special thanks to our host, NDB Media. I am Casey Shapiro, and with me tonight is Dr. Stephen Mathis, a.k.a. the Rock and Roll Shrink. We will be taking calls from our listeners all evening during the show at 914-338-0314. You can also follow along in our live chat room on blogtalkradio.com as the show is happening. Before we begin, a couple quick disclaimers. This show does not constitute a doctor-client relationship, nor legal or medical representation of any kind. Also, the views expressed on this show are those of Dr. Mathis and Ms. Shapiro, and are not an official stance on behalf of the psychological community or its peer vetting or regulatory bodies. And now, a topic-relevant bit of music played by Dr. Mathis himself. Take it away, Doc. As always, thank you for that, and if you would, please let us know the name of the song and the artist and its relevance to tonight's topic.
Okay, so that was a snippet from an older Green Day album of or CD, depending on your media of choice, American Idiot, which is a song called Holiday, and since we're in the holidays and talking about the holidays, I thought that would be kind of a cool little ditty to introduce for this evening's topic.
Fabulous. Thank you for that. As Dr. Mathis mentioned, tonight's episode is entitled I'll Be Home for Christmas, Holiday Losses, which we will discuss in a moment. Before we begin our topic discussion, let's first go to the Rock and Roll Shrink Recalls, a moment of rock music trivia stories as recounted by Dr. Mathis, if you would, sir.
So tonight I'm going to talk a little bit about guitars, which I often do. And so tonight's particular topic is on the Gibson years, as I'm going to call it, for Eric Clapton. So most people who are, excuse me, Clapton persons know that probably since the Derek and Dominoes era Clapton, which was 1970s, where obviously Layla and other assorted love songs was put out by Derek and Dominoes, the band he was playing with at the time. Since that time up until the present, Eric has largely played Fenders, predominantly Stratocasters of varying pickup configurations and finishes and that sort of thing. But prior to that, he was a Gibson guy. And so I thought tonight I would talk about his early years when he was playing with John Mayall and with Cream, where he was playing, and with Blind Faith, where he was playing predominantly Gibsons. So early on, most people will probably remember, if you've seen the Farewell Cream tour or any of the stuff with Cream, he was playing a Gibson ES-335, a cherry red. So that's kind of become the landmark, and he played that during the Cream years and during the Blind Faith years. So he had it was a blocked marker. So Gibson ES-335s, some of them come with dots and as fret markers, and some of them come with blocks. So this particular one was an ES-335 TDC, which is one with blocks on it, which I personally like better than the dots. I love blocks. I'm just kind of a block freak. And it has sort of become known back in the day as the quote-unquote Royal Albert Hall 335, because it's the one he played with the Cream's Farewell concert at the Royal Albert Hall. So that was in 68. So eventually Clapton sold the instrument, put it up for auction at Christie's, you know, for part of the stuff that he was doing for his Crossroads, that he does a lot for his Crossroads Treatment Center. And it basically, when it went on auction, I think it was 2004 at Christie's, went for almost $850,000. So that definitely pulled a few coins for the treatment center. It's kind of funny because eventually, the 335s back in the day were not all that expensive back in the 60s. In fact, most guitars weren't all that expensive in the 60s, but as things have certainly gotten more expensive over the years, and particularly if they're played by someone famous like Clapton or Harrison or whatever, they're going to go for big bucks. So in the prior to that, when he was with Cream, he was playing a guitar called the Fool, which I've talked about in a previous historical lesson, which was a Gibson SG, which was done for him. The artwork was done for him by one of the Fool, quote-unquote, art folks back in the day. And eventually that guitar ended up in the hands of Todd Rundgren, who then, and in fact, before, you know, when Clapton was using that, he recorded most of the Cream era songs with that, the stuff off Disraeli Gears. It sort of back in the day had the nickname of Sunshine, because that was kind of the famous guitar tone, the so-called quote-unquote woman tone that appears on Cream's Sunshine of Your Love, and that's why the guitar was nicknamed originally Sunshine, even though it typically known in history as the Fool because of the paint job on it, the artistic paint job on it. And he'd made a couple of changes to the guitar when he had it, and because it originally wasn't in that color. The folks at the art collective did that. The Fool, quote-unquote, art collective did that for him. And so once it ended up in other people's hands, and including, as I mentioned, Todd Rundgren, he made some aesthetic changes in terms of the vibrato stick, and it took the old original vibrato off of it and put a stop bar on it and changed out the shalers on it, the tuning keys and that kind of stuff. It also ended up in the hands of initially Jackie Lomax, who was an Apple recording artist who was buddies with George Harrison, And it was rumored at one time that Harrison had the guitar for a while, but it ended up in Jackie Lomax's hands, who then sold it to Todd Rundgren, which is how Todd got it. I think Todd got it in 71 and played it pretty much up until the 1990s on and off. And I think Rundgren still has it, but I wouldn't swear to that. I'm not quite sure about that. Prior to The Fool, which is, as I mentioned, a Gibson SG, he's notorious for playing the Cherry Sunburst Les Paul, also known as the quote-unquote Beano Les Paul, because it was played during the sessions with John Mayall and Blues Breakers on the famous quote-unquote Beano record, and so-called because Clapton appears on the front of the cover with the rest of John Mayall's bandmates. And he's reading this comic book, Beano comic book, so the album has been called the Beano album, even though it's technically known as John Mayall and the Blues Breakers featuring Eric Clapton. And that's sort of the record that put Clapton on the map and kind of made him famous in taking that Les Paul and playing it on that recording. And did so because some of his famous blues players played that. So that Les Paul Cherry Sunburst was the one that really put him on the map and really actually also helped put Les Pauls back on the map, because Gibson Les Pauls at the time were going through pretty much a very hard time. They had not sold very many of them, and they quit making them. And then as soon as the Beano record came out, that really, really sparked interest. And by the mid to late 60s, the Les Pauls were back into production, I think 68, where they put them back into production, which was during Cream's era also. So Clapton not only made the Les Paul famous at that point, he also got kind of boosted sales because people were so blown away by his performance. If any of our listeners have not heard that record, it is really amazing. I re-listened to it not too long ago. I have a copy on CD and listened to it not too long ago, and it's just like, wow. I mean, you still listen to it today, and you're just like, holy moly. I mean, the stuff he's doing off that is just really amazing. And I can imagine when that came out at the time, it was just mind-bending for people to hear that kind of stuff. So the three famous Gibsons that Clapton played during his Cream and John Mayall era were the Gibson ES-335s, the Gibson Les Paul Beano, the 335 also come to being known as the Royal Albert Hall 335, and the Gibson SG, which I think was a 1964 SG, but don't quote me on that one. The so-called The Fool, as it's become known because of the paint job, but affectionately known as Sonny, short for Sunshine, when he was using it with Cream during Sunshine of Your Love. So that is the short version of Clapton with Gibson for about 5 years. And then after that, after the Blind Faith era, and he started playing with Derek and Domino's and did his first solo record just prior to that, when he was doing Delaney and Bonnie, he's been playing Strats pretty much ever since. So Gibson lost him to Fender, and Fender's been very happy ever since then. So there you go.
All righty. Thank you very much for that. Very interesting. Again, we will be taking calls from our listeners and questions in the online chat room throughout the evening until around midnight. Feel free to give us a call. Again, the number is 914-338-0314. All right, so I have a little something that I grabbed for you guys real quick, a little holiday appropriate here. Let's see if anybody knows who this is. That actually was Lita Ford featured on a cut where Twisted Sister did a remake of I'll Be Home for Christmas. It's certainly not Bing Crosby, not by a long shot. So I thought
that
would be a good lead-in.
On that.
Yeah.
Yeah, she was a guest singer on that CD.
Gotcha. Okay, I didn't know about the rest of the CD. I just know that one cut. But
it came out maybe last year or 2 years ago with Twisted Sister, where Dee Snider did their first and only Christmas recording, and she was one of the guest singers on that.
Nice. Okay. Well, good. Tonight's show, as the song implies, is called I'll Be Home for Christmas, Holiday Losses. So our last show dealt with situations in which people were forced to deal with family members that they might not have wanted to because of the holiday season and its myriad events and get-togethers. So tonight's episode will look at the flip side of that situation, how to deal with holidays and gatherings when someone you do actually want to see is not there, be it from a death, estrangement, logistics or scheduling problems, such as, you know, work commitments, geography, living too far apart, money being too tight to feasibly travel, and similar situations. So tonight we will discuss holidays when calendars don't line up, holidays at a distance, holidays as a time of reconciliation or closure, and holidays when grieving or mourning. And before we get started, I'm going to check in with you, Dr. Mathis, and see if there's anything you'd like to say before we get started.
Nope, I'm good. Thanks.
All righty. So I want to remind you guys, like I mentioned last time, because these are topics that we talk about quite a bit, I want to remind you about other helpful episodes of our radio show that talk about some topics that tie into aspects of tonight's discussion. And you can find those on iTunes or on blogtalkradio.com in the archives by searching for them by titles or keywords. And I will also post this sublist on our Facebook page. They're also on the master list, where you can find the link and click over to Blog Talk Radio right to the episode. So there are three. I trimmed the list down from the last time because last time we were talking more about toxic family situations and things like that, and that doesn't really apply this time. So I want to direct you guys to episode 35, The Grand Illusion. And that was from December 2017. It was The Myth of Perfect Holidays. And episode 56, The Psychology of Holidays. That was in November of 2018. And episode 68, Wish You Were Here, Grief, Loss, Mourning, and Closure, from May of this year. And those episodes might help you guys out a little further with those subsections of talking about stuff tonight. So coping with various aspects of traditions and holidays is one of our most frequently analyzed topics from a variety of perspectives. Even at its most positive, it is an emotionally heavy topic for pretty much all of us. So tonight, we're going to talk about dealing with feelings and emotions about the holidays regarding people who are not with us and we wish they were. We'll talk about this in order from least serious to most severe circumstances and ways to deal with holiday absence and loneliness. There is one aspect of this topic that is more or less universal for all but maybe the last aspect of it, and that is that ultimately if we're unhappy about how things are, we need to be the one responsible for making at least a fair share of the effort to change things when possible and be in charge of finding a compromise which we can accept when things are out of our control. Obviously, when someone's no longer with us, it doesn't apply equally because there's just no solving their absence. But we will talk about what people can do to make it easier to cope. But the main point is that if things are going to change, it is up to us to start that process and guide what it looks like. We also have to be willing to be flexible and creative with solutions and willing to ask for what we want or need. Also, it is important to realize that others may be struggling as well or feel guilty or ashamed of their own grieving. Their distance may not mean they don't care about you. They may be overwhelmed themselves. Most of tonight's advice will be less clinical and scientific than our usual, and much more just some real talk to try to help our listeners out in having as much desired holiday connectedness as possible. So first up, let's talk about holidays when calendars don't line up. This is probably the gentlest scenario in which people are apart. So it's probably the easiest of the scenarios to cope with in, improve or even solve most of the time. Once in a while, there are people we miss, or we may be the person others miss, who are just perpetually busy for various reasons. Even if you're lucky enough to live in the same local area or within a reasonable traveling distance, sometimes things just don't seem to work out schedule-wise. If you're the one missing someone, and this is assuming you two are on good terms and the holdup is the calendar, reach out to them significantly well in advance of when you hope to see them. A lot of perennially busy people just need an unusual amount of advance notice to make something work. I know I'm one of them. I tend to grossly overcommit. And so a lot of times if you want to get together and do something special, I could use a couple weeks. A month is better. Then I can make sure I have that time blocked off. I don't book something else. You could ask them to pick out a date that they're sure works for them. It may not be on the holiday you hope for, but it is still a start in mending their absence from your life. If you're the one who's getting requests to socialize, it's not good to leave people hanging, ignore them, or otherwise refuse to deal with the issue. Again, we're assuming that you're on good terms and scheduling is the issue here. So find a date you can work with and invite those that you want to see. It may not line up with important holidays this season, but it's a start towards healing your mutual loneliness. Some people may be homebound or chronically ill. If both parties have this issue, maybe you can see if a mutual able-bodied family member or friend could somehow intervene, arrange for transport or whatever it may take to get people together. And I'm going to stop here and check in with you, Dr. Mathis, and see if there's other advice that you'd like to give.
Well, the other thing I would say is sometimes people who are divorced and remarried may have, or married to somebody who has kids from another marriage and whatever, sometimes people are expected to go multiple places for the holidays, which requires, kind of a, what I call a calendar scheduling issue. And so sometimes you have to do, okay, well, we're going to go to this set of parents' house on Christmas Eve and this set of parents' house on Christmas Day, or this set of parents' house on, you know, the evening before Hanukkah and the evening after, or we'll go to these people's house for Christmas and these people's house for New Year's or whatever. Sometimes you have to do the, what I call, let's make a kinship deal.
Yeah.
And, you know, kind of juggle between stuff. And, you know, that becomes difficult for kids of divorced families when parents, particularly when parents have remarried and they're still, or even when they're just in different homes in the same place and the kid is juggling back between parents. So if you're one of those kids, try to, you know, talk to the legally responsible parent about getting this thing worked out. And if you're one of the adults, do your kid a favor and don't use the time to punish your ex with feelings or in-laws that you may or may not like if you're in a new marriage. You know, you got to put, this is the time to put as much of that stuff aside as you can and try to make time to get stuff together. And again, this is assuming that everybody wants to get together. You know, then it's easier. But whatever the case is, you have a great point. The more you can be proactive about this and make plans well in advance, particularly with multiple family members living in different places, even in the same city and expecting different stuff, make your plans well in advance and work out a calendar and then stick to it. Don't do any last-minute funky things unless you have an emergency.
Yeah.
The other thing I would say is, which I'm going to talk about a little bit more next time, is, you know, if you want to share it with multiple people and it's not possible, which will be more for the next topic I think you're going to talk about, you can always do video conferencing, you know, because most computers now have video monitors on them. And, you know, or if you have a phone that has Apple Chat or whatever the heck it's called. You can tell how great I am with electronics.
FaceTime.
There you go. Any kind of video conferencing or any of that kind of stuff. That makes it easier, particularly for folks who are out of state, who can't make it, or in different cities and they're working, or they have school, they're at college, and they don't have enough time to come home or whatever. That's also an alternative.
Yeah, and you are right. I'm just about to get into that in a little more detail. Another thing that I didn't really write down, but I remember from doing research for this, a lot of things they talk about are people that are experiencing a sense of loss or disconnect at the holidays a lot of times struggle with self-esteem issues. And so they're reluctant to ask for what they want or let people know they're lonely, or they feel like, oh, I don't want to bother you because your parents are over, so I didn't ask you to come by. And, you know, what I'm trying to say to you guys is that you need to swallow that part and ask and be honest and be transparent, and also be really clear who among your circle you can be this truthful with. I mean, there are probably some friends that don't really want to get these messages, but there are some friends who will. And, you know, just stick to that, because a lot of people feel like they can't ask for these things, and you've really got to, because
yeah,
you're
you
the only one that knows what you need. Yes, you absolutely have to self-advocate. And it's going to be, unfortunately, during a time and during a mood when you least are going to feel like it. But I'm assuming that you guys are listening because you want to solve this. And you have to solve it by speaking up for yourself, because nobody's going to know what needs changing if you don't point at it. So anything else? And then we can go on to the next topic.
No, I'm good. Thank you.
Okay. So holidays at a distance. Definitely a good segue from what we were just talking about. So next, let's talk about when people might have the time to hang out, if we were still local to one another, if you ever were. But the holdup is that they live far away, and especially if perhaps money is tight or other situations, getting time off work, you have small kids and traveling's kind of hard, pets at home, and, you know, that kind of stuff, and traveling is difficult. You may want to consider ways to help other people come to visit you, assist with pet boarding, finding travel discounts, that sort of thing. If these things are beyond your means or skills, then maybe you could make use of the internet to connect and arrange for a video chat or at least a phone call, or exchange pictures of each other's decorations. Send a special card, not just one out of the box that, you know, all of them are just the same, but, you know, pick out something for that person. Swapping holiday recipes or, you know, Christmas ornaments if you celebrate Christmas or Yule or any of that. Even treats if they're mailable. So that means swap the holiday cookie recipes, hint, hint. Most people love photos and videos of what they're missing, so don't hesitate to share. And a lot of people love cookies, even if they're not celebrating Christmas. I'm just saying. Total hint. If you're not that good with the internet, it's okay. It's time to enlist someone who is. I'm sure you all know somebody who is. You have your pet geek around somewhere to help you find travel discounts or else ways to share your holidays across the miles. If you are someone who is great with the internet, you might consider volunteering to help out by teaching others how to use it to stay connected across the miles. You can teach family members, and not necessarily just the ones that are up in age. I mean, some of us who are up in age were around when the internet was getting going. We made that happen, so we're not all completely helpless. But, you know, there are some people who are younger who just don't know how to do stuff. There are people who might struggle with whatever, you know, even internet access. If you can help people get connected, you might want to do a workshop at the library or at a local church or something, and just, you know, help people to connect. If you're somebody, if you might be an empty nester or an adult who's made a separate new home or family of your own, so now you've got multiple households. You know, we were talking earlier about divorced households, but even if that's not what's going on, you know, kids grow up, they get married or they get a partner, and they go off and they have their own place. Whatever the situation, think of some alternative ways to keep connected and use them. Don't be afraid to use them. And I'm going to stop here and check in with you again, Dr. Mathis.
No, I'm good. I think a lot of what you said is kind of some of the things I would say as well. One of the things I was thinking about as you were talking about getting somebody who's good with the internet to help is the lyrics to Joe Walsh's Analog Man. Oh, he talks about when he gets stuck on, because he's evidently not a good internet guy either, and he talks about getting some quote-unquote smart-ass 10-year-old to show him what to do. So Hey, you gotta love Joe. My thought was, find your nearest neighbor with kids under 10, and guarantee you they know more about the internet than anybody, any adults you'll find, unless they're a programmer or some kind of IT person, and get them to come over and show you, because they love that kind of stuff.
Yes, definitely.
And then you can bribe them with cookies or cakes or whatever, and they like that too.
That's true. That is very true. That's another use for holiday treats is bribery to people to help you stay connected to your family.
I'm
all for that. Yes, definitely. All right, so the next part we want to talk about is holidays as a time of reconciliation or closure. So next is a slightly more difficult situation, missing someone at the holidays who is absent because they are estranged or you are from them in some way. Sometimes they may be people with whom we want to reconcile. Sometimes they may not be, such as the toxic relatives we discussed in our last episode. Or for various other reasons, we may be unable to mend things between ourselves. But they once held a cherished place in our lives, and their absence matters to us when holiday celebrations happen. They may be people with whom we have quarreled and not made up. They may be people with whom we have broken up our relationship. And it may be for the best that they're elsewhere, but the longing for less contentious times remains. Sometimes people cut us off and we don't even know why. Those are sometimes one of the hardest of all with which to cope. This is a big emotional risk for whichever party most hopes to reconcile. This is a tough time of year to be rejected, if that should happen at all. If you think, or you even know, that the rift is mostly your own doing, you might try extending a sincere apology, a little bit of an olive branch, and ask nothing else along with it, at least not at first. Make it about itself. Most people will be overwhelmed with holiday things already, and mending fences takes a lot of personal attention and thought. They might process it all and be ready to meet up, but don't demand it or expect it. Just go at their pace and be truthful and accountable. If you are the aggrieved party and someone reaches out to you, be careful, because holiday sentiment could tempt you to accept an apology that it might not be healthy that you should, just to feel the rush of that Hallmark moment of homecoming with all the lights. Oh, step back and think on it. In fact, sleep on it. Consult your partner or trusted friends. If it's sincere, go for it, but don't let seasonal exuberance lead you down a path of later regret and new bad memories. If someone toxic comes around trying to get back into your life, it might be time to make holiday plans that emphasize new traditions you can make without them, and thus soften the allure of old habits. You may want to make some symbolic gesture or statement to symbolize the new ways and traditions to have some sense of closure if you feel you need to let it go and move along. And I'm going to stop here and check in with you, Dr. Mathis.
Yeah, one thing I would say is, if you're the person who's been injured and the person who did the injuring, reaches out to you, you can always accept their apology and say, thank you, that's very sincere. I think, you can also say, I think it would be best for us to, remain as we are, but I really, you acknowledge the fact that they had the wherewithal to apologize to you, and you can appreciate their sincerity if they're sincere about it and reinforce that. That doesn't mean you have to take them up on their offer, but I do think you ought to at least acknowledge it and congratulate them for their courage and coming forth and being genuine and honest about the mistake they made. But that doesn't mean you have to go back and try to remend something if it's not really in your best interest to do that. The same thing applies if you're the party who did the injuring. You can always send them out a holiday card of whatever holiday they celebrate and write a note in the card just saying, something to the effect of, during this holiday season and this time of, remembering and trying to make peace with stuff, I wanted to reach out and apologize for the things that I do, and just wanted to say that I recognize that I made an error, and hopefully that, as time goes by, it won't be as painful for you, or that, you'll be able to realize that I made a mistake or whatever. without making any kind of reference to, hey, we should get together and, you know, let's start all over. Just make the apology, savor your piece, and then let it go and let the put the ball in the other person's court and let them take the lead if they want to get back together.
Yeah, I definitely think that is important. People would be too tempted to go too fast.
Mm-hmm.
And
absolutely.
That's a good way to have it. And you don't want a holiday blow up on top of everything else that's already happened. So just
yeah.
Go slow. Yeah.
Yes, ma'am. That is true.
Definitely. All righty. So now comes the super crunchy part. Holidays when grieving or mourning. And this is frequently the most emotional and painful situation of loss for people to process at the holidays. And sometimes there's a double whammy for people who actually lost someone during the holiday season or on an important date. The memory of both is forever associated together, and it's quite difficult to be involved in holiday activities and not invoke sad memories. One of the most important things to remember is that everyone grieves differently. So don't put demands on yourself or onto others about how long it takes or whether you have an obligation to shut up about your sadness so others can celebrate. Some losses are never done, and that's healthy and typical in many situations. You might consider making a tradition or keeping one going that you associate with the person you have lost. This could bring up a lot of emotions, but some people may find the remembrance to be helpful over time. Only you can be the judge of how you mourn. So what is important is to be honest, be kind to yourself and others mourning, and yet also create room to have mixed feelings where you may enjoy some parts of the holiday and not feel bad about it. One situation that can be intensely difficult to process is losing a loved one near or even on a special holiday. I want to give credit. One of my good friends, a distant cousin of mine down in Texas, lost her parents a few years ago. The father went first, and the mother died a few months later on Christmas Eve. And they've never really gotten over it because they were kind of estranged towards the end. Both of them had health problems. They were not in good temperament, and there was a lot of quarreling, and the cousin was taking care of them. So they were kind of, you know, berating the caregiver and the whole thing. And then all of a sudden they were gone, and there was no way to heal any of that. And that's kind of how this topic came up. So those are extra hard because now the date has an association. So you have to be your own judge about what you can handle. Some people want to go in and grab the bull by the horns, and some people just don't. They need to avoid. And don't punish yourself for that. Don't punish other people if that's what they need to do. You may have mixed feelings about this. You're having a good time. They're playing your favorite song. And then, wham, you think about so-and-so died. And you have to be kind. So whether you would do better with some private time or surrounded by other family or trusted friends, allow yourself whatever it is you need to acknowledge your loss, even if what you need changes, even if it changes quickly. And here I'm going to stop and check in with you, Dr. Mathis, and see if there's anything you want to add.
Yeah, I think the point that you make is a good one, that everybody grieves differently and everybody grieves in different time frames. There is at some point, however, that if you're still grieving at the same level that you were grieving at 3, 4, 5, 10 years down the road, you'll probably want to get some help to try to resolve that. You don't want to hold on to that level of grief. Yes, you can remember your loved one years later and feel a tinge of sadness at them not being there to celebrate your birthdays or certain holidays for you. But if you're feeling the same level of intensity you did 5 years ago, 10 years ago when they first passed, this is not a good thing. So you might want to try to take care of that. One of the things I can tell the listeners here is that when my dad passed about 5 years ago, it was right before Thanksgiving. It's a double-edged sword. Fortunately, I had very little relationship with my dad because he was not a very nice person. So I pretty much closed the book on him a long time ago. And just prior to him passing, on my birthday, he pulled a real doozy, which was the very last time I ever spoke with him on the phone. And that was all kinds of fun. So sometimes I look back on my birthday and kind of go, ew. You know, and I, at this point, and I, you know, I was very pissed off about it at the time. And so it wasn't as a sad thing. It wasn't a grieving mourning. It was like, how dare that son of a bitch have that little empathy and that little consideration he's calling about himself. Oh, right, because he's a narcissist, so it's all about him, which he was. So that was a little easier to deal with it. My mom, who passed a couple of weeks before Halloween, which is one of my favorite holidays, you know, that was a different scenario. But I think, as I've mentioned to the listeners probably a couple of times ago, my mom had had several trans ischemic attacks, and for probably 4.5, almost 5 years, she'd been pretty much in a bed staring at a TV, not knowing who she was, where she was, what was going on. And so it was both a blessing and a sadness when she passed, because, you know, to have a person who had the amount of brain power she had and to not have it for 4.5, 5 years, it was just very, very, very sad. So it was a mixed blessing when she passed for me. But I still certainly remember her on the holidays, even though the very last Christmas I had with my parents was miserable, which I think I mentioned last time. Prior to that, you know, certainly my parents argued all the time. But when my mom and I were alone, when we weren't around, when the three of us weren't together, the times I had with my mom were really, really special. And, you know, during various times, the holidays, I remember those times, you know, trips that we took together or, you know, things we celebrated together or whatever. So it's a mixed blessing, and I still have a tinge, if you will, of, gee, it would be kind of fun to have her here doing these things with me. But it's not a horrible sadness, because I wouldn't want her in the condition she was in to do that, because she was suffering, you know, like that. So I think part of it for me is to remember the good times and be thankful that we had those and not be whiny and bitchy about the fact that I don't still have them with her, because I did have a bunch of really good times with her, and occasionally I had some good times with my dad. And so, I try not to over-pathologize my father, and I try not to over-glorify the times when they were good, because I knew they were just going to be fleeting because of his personality disorder. But most of the time, my mom were pretty good, and I just, you know, it's just you have to remember them fondly, those who with whom you had a good relationship. You remember them fondly, and for me, the holidays are a time for me to be thankful and look back and do, every time we have a sort of the end of the year, I do this like life review thing for the previous year. And I look at the stupid mistakes I made during the year. And, you know, being the compulsive guy I am, I tend to be very, very, very hard on myself and really overly focused and not a good way on the stuff that I do that's not great. And, you know, so trying to balance that, I think, is important. It's important for everybody, but it's really important for me, being the compulsive-oriented kind of guy that I am. And having my memory, fond memories of friends who aren't around and my mom and that kind of stuff for the holidays really, for me, are kind of a pick-me-up in the sense of it's kind of a warm remembrance. And while I would like to have them the way they were prior to the, you know, the cognitive degradation, I'm just thankful that I have the memories that I can go back and look and all the great times that we had. And so it's a bittersweet moment. And I think for those who have that kind of loss in their life, for people that they were close with, I think you can do the same thing. You can create a memory that you still are a little sad that they're not there, but you also have an appreciation and being thankful that you had the time with them and that they enriched your life in the times that you did spend with them. And I think that's important for us to remember.
Yeah. I would agree with you on that. The last thing that I want to talk about in summary is some bits of advice from a couple articles on the topic. And these could apply to any of these four situations. Only you know what feels best for yourself, so don't hesitate to use this. And these are just a few suggestions. These are not even remotely close to a comprehensive list, but it's an example of what you guys could do. And, you know, your mileage may vary, of course. So you can just, you know, adjust as seems obvious as what feels right for you. So This is mostly from an article called A Plan for Making the Best of the Holiday Season, Even When You Want to Skip It Entirely. This was posted November 29th last year on Psychology Today Online by Beverly Flaxington, who is a certified professional behavioral analyst, author, and corporate consultant on behavior. She says, if the holidays are not happy days for you or for someone you care about, this may be the year to make some changes and decide that you aren't going to lose 6 to 8 weeks of your life just trying to get through. This year, consider whether you could find something you are passionate about for volunteering. There are a few things that take anyone's mind off their own troubles faster than seeing the troubles somebody else has experienced.
Definitely.
Visit children in the hospital or people at a nursing home or elderly shut-ins. My own comments here, if you are the shut-in, perhaps specifically invite someone to your place rather than just generically announcing you would like some company. Make plans at work for a specific person of your choosing. And you'll find that probably works better, because when you just tell everybody, gosh, I'll be alone at Hanukkah or whatever, everybody thinks everybody else is going to take care of it.
Uh-huh.
And if you invite, if you invite somebody specifically, they kind of feel like, oh, Aunt Mary wants to see me. So
yep.
I should find a day that I can go. So, you know, be specific about these things. And if you don't have anybody to invite, then try to go and see somebody who doesn't have anybody to invite either. Walk a dog at the local shelter or hold the cats and kittens, bunnies, guinea pigs who are stuck there waiting for their forever homes. I don't know about other parts of the country, but up here there are several shelters who have allowed holiday foster, which is basically they allow certain particular pets that have been vetted to go home with families just for the holiday, just so they can have a good time for a little while. They're not a, it's not a full-on foster situation, so if you're not ready for that kind of commitment, it can be kind of fun to have a dog around. Maybe last year Fluffy passed away and you don't have a little Fluffy this year, so you can have some other kind of Fluffy that didn't have a home. So that might be good. Plan something that it's fun for you. Plan your day for the holiday itself and any surrounding days where you might be tempted to feel sad or down. Be ready with your plan to do something that fills you with joy. Be sure it is uplifting and not self-destructive. It should be a healthy and safe outlet.
Definitely.
And that could be anything. It could be an activity. It could be a self-care day, you know, a pamper spa thing. You could go on a staycation somewhere nearby that you haven't been. Or haven't been in a while, you know, just to get away from it and clear the air. Another thing you can do is consider that the holidays might be the right time to readjust some of your relationships. Are there people that you've become disconnected from over time? Is there someone you need to build a bridge back to again, or someone you need to forgive? The holidays can be a time of renewal, and you always have the choice to take a different approach with broken relationships. The beauty of the holidays is that they are predictable. You know when Thanksgiving, Hanukkah, Christmas, and the like will fall. It isn't a surprise. So you can prep for them and determine what's best for you. So those are just a few suggestions. Anything that is remotely like this, or even something that's different if it just seems to call to you, feel free to do it. Take charge of doing it, because you can't sit here and wait for life to happen to you. If you know, you know how you grieve, so you've got to be the one who's the cruise director and how this goes. So, you know, in conclusion, we hope now that our listeners better understand how to deal with holiday loneliness or grieving, and now have some idea of things to do to make the season easier to deal with in a time of loss. So this is pretty much the wrap of our show on holiday losses. I'm going to check in with you, Dr. Mathis, and see if there's anything further on this that you would like to add in closing.
Yeah, I just want to say that whatever you do, if the holidays are difficult for you, plan well in advance what you're going to do and make sure, as you mentioned earlier, that whatever it is you do is a positive step. Getting, you know, stocking up on Jack Daniels and getting drunk off your assets is not considered a good step, or stocking up on your methamphetamine stash. So, you know, anything that's going to help you, whether it's, you know, learning Tai Chi or yoga or meditation or mindfulness or going on a trip or taking a walk in the park or going volunteering at a shelter or whatever. All those things are great ideas to do. To whatever it is, don't wait till the last minute and go, oh, because I don't want to think about it. The holidays are coming up next month. Oh, my God. Well, good. Now's the time. Don't use escape avoidance, because then the holidays will come. They'll kick in the assets, and then you'll be scrambling for something last minute. Not a good idea.
Yeah. Scrambling definitely makes you depressed, because you feel like you have no control over stuff, and then you're just standing here and letting life happen to you, and that's a very good way to go back into depression.
Yep.
All righty. So on behalf of myself, Dr. Mathis, and NDB Media, we want to thank our listeners this evening and give our appreciation to those of you who might be joining us later via podcast, iTunes, etc. We'll see you guys in 2 weeks with a new topic for discussion, and we will be here on Christmas Day evening, December 25th, 11 p.m. EDT, right here on blogtalkradio.com. It's not EDT, it's EST. That's my bad. I need to fix that. We'd also like to give a shout-out to other NDB Media shows coming up in the next couple of weeks, technically the first one not. The Walking Dead online viewing party is on hiatus in conjunction with the TV show, and we'll resume Season 10, Episode 9 on Sunday, February 23rd, 2020. So we've got several weeks before that's back. But please come back and join us then, Monday, the 23rd at 10 p.m., Fandom Access, Mr. Robot Finale Special. Join the F Society enthusiasts Karen and AJ as they dissect the series finale of Mr. Robot and talk about one of TV's most brilliant and original series as a whole. So please look for us on Facebook, on Twitter, on iTunes, and at www.rockandrollshrink.com. Good night, everybody. Thanks for joining us, and rock on.